This is the Land and Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Whitetail Properties Real Estate. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye. This is your weekly resource for habitat management, wildlife management, and recreational real estate. We hope you guys enjoy the show. All right, guys, if you are thinking about buying or selling land, period, you need to do yourself a favor and go check out whitetailproperties.com. The professionalism, the ethic that is just incorporated into the brand and to the land agents themselves, those who you would be working with in your respective region, is second to none. Adam and I have had the pleasure of working with a lot of different folks and a lot of different transactions across lots of different states, but one thing definitely rings true is the caliber in which Whitetail Properties works at. So you owe it to yourself to go check out them online at whitetailproperties.com. Browse their properties. Or if you are interested in seeing what your property may bring, go contact a land agent in your region. They are rapidly growing and spreading across the country. About 40 different states now, they have land agents and representatives in your region. So make sure you check them out, whitetailproperties.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. This is your host, Matt Dye, and we are in blessed November. Once again, guys, we hope that you are enjoying and getting some time outside in a tree stand safely or in a blind chasing a target deer. What a glorious time to be a bow hunter. We've had actually some good cold fronts move in. It's been unseasonably warm, but man, the end of October turned cool across a lot of the country. Or at least just return to averages. And now we have an impending cold front coming in that's going to drop temperatures, certainly in the Midwest and a lot even in the Ohio River Valley, Tennessee, Indiana, and beyond, well into the 20s come Sunday and Monday, kind of the 8th, 9th, 10th of November. So what a perfect time frame for a wonderful cold front. It gets me excited. Bucks are moving. Had a chance and opportunity to get out the past couple of days. Saw some decent activity. Some bucks chasing, scraping, breaking, snapping limbs, carrying them in their antlers, chasing does, bumping, a little bit of grunting. Just not a target deer in range yet for myself, but they are on their feet and moving around, and that is amazing and fun to see. So we're going to keep after it and try and put our best foot forward on picking the right stands and just making the best judgment calls possible when it comes to getting in the woods here. So hope the same for you guys. But I wanted to, before we jump into today's podcast, just a couple quick announcements. We have been working on something for well over a year now, just edits and different versions and what have you, of a new product essentially. And so that is going to be released relatively soon. Just want to give a heads up on it. And obviously for something that's been taking a long time to be able to build and create, we are making sure we're dotting I's and crossing T's on what it is and the quality that it is. But I know from past success on releasing products, etc., that are knowledge-based products, that this one I'm more excited than in others past. So it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be extremely beneficial, helpful. And so be paying attention, be watching for that. If you haven't subscribed to the social channels, be sure to do that, because we'll be releasing information on it, certainly, hopefully in the coming weeks to early months. But it's turning a page and getting into kind of the final season of putting a bow on that project. So be watching for it. You guys are definitely going to want to have your eyeballs on it, let's say. In addition, we've got consulting that is definitely ramping up. We've got a lot of interest for 2026, and many of you have emailed in thus far, and we appreciate those inquiries. Keep them coming. We've got still some dates in the early portion of winter that are available, but beginning to look into the spring months as well. So Please keep us informed if you're interested. Obviously, today on today's podcast, you're going to hear a client success story, a great family, a great team, basically really revamping and looking at management, deer management, habitat management in the Southeast and doing an incredible job. And fortunately for them, they've had some success here in the past couple of weeks that we are excited to share, along with many other people as well. So we're sharing a lot of those successes on social media that are getting sent to us from clients. And if you guys just want to see from across the country, from Virginia to South Carolina to Iowa, lots in Missouri, of course, Tennessee, we're talking booners, and then just some really respectable deer for every portion of the country, mid-Atlantic to west to south to upper Midwest. It doesn't matter. Successes are rolling through as they should be for this time of the year, and obviously for those who are putting in the work and executing the plans and listening and following along and executing what it is they're hearing, or if they have been a client, what's been provided to them, right? So that success follows execution. And happy to share those ones. And you could see that on Instagram and Facebook as well, sharing those different successes in stories and in social media posts. But some slammers are hitting the ground, and I suspect that is only going to continue throughout the rest of the season itself. So fantastic. I am looking forward to continuing to hunt with the bow and then a late season Iowa tag. And there's quite a few good deer up in Iowa on this particular piece. And it's going to be hopefully a fantastic season here for myself. And I'm hoping and praying the same thing for you guys. But just want to give you those updates before we jump into this week's podcast and listen and hear from Jesse Fuhrer and his forester, farm manager, land manager, whatever you want to call it, Penn Bowers, from South Carolina. Again, fantastic story. And just I think the story and theme of this is just really reevaluating what it looks like to manage property in the Southeast. And Alan, our habitat consultant out of Alabama, has been working with a ton of you all in the Southeast, and it's a great representative for the Land Legacy team in the Southeast. But really just, I guess what I'm saying is, in many years and for many years, the pine market and timber market has jaded and or I'm saying confused, but just muddied water, I feel like, in what truly is pure form wildlife management. And of course, we have to be managing the resources within the interests of the clients. And for many clients, right, there is an aspect of timber management and monetary gains from that. So, right, those plans are tailored towards those goals and objectives. But many people we're seeing are getting away from the strictly solely focused or the combo of timber management and wildlife management, and really honing in on just the wildlife aspect side of that as the timber markets completely change, the difficulty of moving those the resource itself to lumber mills and whatnot. It just has become more difficult in the past years, as many of you, I'm sure, are continuing to see that and experience that yourself. So with that, right, we have to change and adjust our plans and the way we execute things to look at different tools. And I think that's what we're seeing here in the Southeast and Jesse's farm, and the way Penn, myself, and Jesse have all worked together and put a plan together. I think we're seeing the fruits of that and the very early stages at this particular farm. And there's several other farms that are in the same process of revamping, revitalizing, and looking at land management in the Southeast. Again, not through the eyes strictly of pine production, and cycling, let's say, of pulpwood harvest, first, second thinnings, clear cut, it going beyond that and managing wildlife as an emphasis. And if there is secondary measures of timber value, then we will do so. But all again based on marketability. And I think that's a fresh new look at what it means to be managing land in the Southeast. So Without further ado, let's hear from Jesse and Penn and get a story of a fantastic eight-pointer that hits the ground in South Carolina. All right, guys. So today we are joined by Jesse and Penn. Guys, welcome to the podcast. Hailing from the upstate South Carolina area. Jesse, Penn, how are you guys doing?
Doing well, Matt. Doing great.
Yeah, lovely, dreary day here.
Yeah, well, we got about the same here for us. Getting a nice rainstorm blowing through for the next 24 hours, and then I think it's going to get pretty hot and heavy wild in the Whitetail Woods. So, time to get some work done, knock it out in the office to be able to free up for our late week hunt that I'm probably going to start hunting quite a bit of mornings and evenings. But I'm excited in the podcast today, guys, because Jesse, sir, congratulations is in order for you. You harvested a fantastic South Carolina buck, and we get to share that story today, man. I'm excited for that.
Oh yeah, no, it was quite a blessing and joy to see your handiwork actually come about and the time and effort you put into things. And then I always tell people when I talk to them, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, and this is what, Matt, you got us doing, and we got a plan. And then 2 years later, it actually comes to success, and you're like, okay, I actually do this. It works. So that's what was really great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as we get into the story, I kind of want to lay a foundation of who's who and how we kind of all work together. Obviously, Jesse, you're a client of Land and Legacy, and your family is from several different properties that we work together on. But Penn is your forester, but he's much more than that as well. Obviously, a very good friend, but works very closely with you and your family in the management side of these properties. And so, Penn, kind of describe for us and the listener who you are, what you do, and I know you wear many hats besides being a Christ follower and a dad, but when within regard to, business and land and timber, what does that look like for you day to day?
Yeah, so by trade, I'm a forester, went to Clemson, and I'm a consulting forester, but that has kind of changed over time a little bit based on the timber industry as it is suffering in the Southeast at the moment. The Lord has carried me through and been blessed to do all kinds of work, basically the on-the-ground land management. If it can be done in the woods, we can do it, or we know somebody who can.
I
And
like that.
this
So,
works well with a passion for hunting.
right. So anything from, selling timber, executing timber sales to hiring contractors from invasive species work to prescribed fire, etc., right?
Absolutely.
Very nice. Very nice. And so you're obviously passionate about that aspect of land management, and it's good to see, right, foresters across the country be in tune with those other practices and not just so singly focused on the timber side of things. Because, right, there's when we're talking about managing wildlife, there's a different perspective that needs to be taken. And after spending, a lot of time in the field with the two of you guys, one, it's a very good working relationship that, right, we get to come in with different points of view and perspectives and say, hey, I'd like to see this here. And then Penn might say, that's great, but we probably need to adjust it and spin it a little bit like this. Would that still give you the end result? Yes, perfect. And Jesse, you guys are extremely good at executing work and getting things done, following a plan, seeing it through. And that's the part of the story that I really enjoy listening to and then sharing here on the podcast, because a plan is just a plan on a piece of paper and an idea until it gets put into action, right? And so we are seeing some of the fruits of your work come through all this, and that's what is encouraging for a lot of people. Because at the end of the day, as you guys both know, there's a lot of work involved in this. It's not just, I'm going to say, all fun and games. Like, there comes a point where, yeah, you're home late, you're greasy, you're dusty, you're smoky. You've got to love it, and it takes a lot of time and hard work to make it all happen.
Amen.
Yeah. And for me, it's this is what I do every day. I'm retired. The Lord was good to let me retire at 43. We were able to sell our family business, and the family, we all decided to buy land. And
Yep.
I mean, we're up to about 1700 acres, so I mean, it's a good chunk over four farms. But I mean, myself, probably 20 to 30 hours a week, working with Penn. So I mean, not all of it is me physically doing a lot of it, maybe 15, 17, 18 hours a week doing
Sure.
actual physical habitat work. The rest is working with Penn and reviewing, going over ideas, priority list, adjusting with the weather. It might
Yeah.
be getting things prepared so that way his crews can start on the next project. So, I mean, that's typically what I've been doing over the last, I guess it's going on two and a half years.
Right.
And having Penn, and his guys working, this year our family, we decided to buy our own equipment, so we got a lot of our own equipment to do the work. So we're not having to rent or lease anything. But I mean, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, and you guys are right. There's always that struggle when you have multiple properties. You're looking at distance and just trying to check the boxes. And it's one thing to plant and get all your food plots done and in time ahead of rains, but much less mobilizing, moving equipment, catching rains here but not there. That one's a failure, and spraying this out over here. There's so many moving parts to be able to do it. So when it does all come together from a successful hunt, it is so nice to see, all that work pay off. And it kind of really just like stokes the fire, I feel like, for man, that was it's taken a lot maybe to get here, but this is just the tip of the iceberg on the success that can continue to come when we get more and more projects done. Or it's man, that setup really worked and that buck read a script. I've got, more of these situations and scenarios I need to build out across the farm. And maybe now I see why we're doing things in the way we are everywhere else. It's like, man, let's just buckle down and get it done, because we can kind of rinse and repeat across the property or across the different farms and just play this game over and over and over again. That's the dream and the desire, right?
Yeah. I mean, even in my philosophy behind too is it's like I might lose another hunting season, but if I have the opportunity to just crank out and get as close as I can with time permitting based upon things need to develop, but to set it up to become a tier four so much quicker because I'm doing all of it. And even if I lose the hunting season, and not able to hunt that area, I'm willing to do that because I know what's going to come quicker and sooner. So
Sure.
that's always been my everything I want to do is a tier four, if possible, but it takes time. It
It
definitely
does.
does.
Takes time to make wine, and there's always the outside variables, which we're going to talk about here in this the podcast as well, is there's a lot of influences that are out of your control that have influences on deer movement as well as hunting pressure. And so that's one thing when we talk about success in the South is there's always someone else probably hunting relatively close by. Just the hunter density that is a part of right upstate South Carolina and really anywhere else. We're talking not generally larger farms, tract sizes, and even if you are, you might be in a lease situation which still has high hunter pressure hunter densities. Therefore, age structure is gets hurt by that, gets dinged by that, strongly influenced by it. So that's why when we can have success like you had this year, Jesse, it's like, man, we gotta tell that story, because there's a lot that has to come together to make that happen and unfold the way that it did. So if you would kind of walk us through, let's just say the area of this the farm and the first time you kind of laid eyes on this deer, and then we'll get into like the moving parts of the management side of things that was done in this general area. Some of the difficulties that we ran into as well, a little bit of head scratchers on some of the management side of things, but really put together a solid plan that's being executed well. But when did this buck really just kind of come on your radar, with regard to, hey, this might be a trophy deer or a target deer here in the future?
Well, I mean, it was October of 24. We call this area the Short Pines because, it's a 90 acres of short pines that were replanted about 4, 5 years ago. And it's part of a bigger piece of property. It's about 150 acres, but this section has 90 acres of short pines. And I had mulched out a section earlier in 24 to put a destination plot in, and it was about 5.5 acres. And that was before you had a chance to come out and visit, and we tweaked things a little bit. But we saw him actually, it was a Friday. Penn actually wanted to go hunting. He's like, I'm gonna go get in the short pines. And he ended up seeing, I think it was, how many deer, Penn? It was like 15.
17 one morning.
Yeah. And
Wow.
he shot a big doe, which was nice. So me, I'm sitting there going, man, I haven't even shot one yet. So I was saying, okay, well, I went out Friday, the next day, and the wind was different. So I had to hunt on the east side of the field, and I just slipped through the pines, got on the edge, and this 8-pointer that I ended, he walked out, and he was 150 yards away walking through the sorghum, and I wanted to shoot him so bad. I mean, I've hunted Canada and I've shot some big deer, but in the States, I haven't really shot a, big buck. And I looked at him and I was like, no, he's only 3.5. I gotta wait. And then later that year, I was actually hunting for an older buck that, he's 7.5. I mean, just really going downhill. And he was actually running with this 8-pointer. They were together in late season after the rut was over. And I saw him, this 8-pointer, two more times, same field in the destination plot. But 300 yards away, it was a little bit further than I wanted to take on a with a wind, 20 miles an hour swaying. So in a tripod. So we just kind of waited, and we knew, and so this year it was we had did some major work in that area, knowing the potential of the bucks that were actually cruising that area. So what led to this year?
When did I'm trying to remember the exact time frame, Jesse, when I came and saw this property. Was that August of 24?
Yeah, it was it's like the 3rd week of August
Yeah.
last year.
I remember it being hot, and I remember there were seed ticks. So that sounds right.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, and I visited in August, put together a plan, and like you guys do, started executing and getting it really just, I'll say whooped into shape. But we had a direction, we had a design, but that didn't mean that it was an easy road to hoe, let's say, when it came to getting the work done. And Penn, I kind of want you to talk about just this unit of pine itself, and can I don't want to necessarily spend a ton of time on it, but I do want people in the South and those out of the South to have context of that timber market that you referenced, and just kind of the future management decisions that we were making about this particular stand itself, and what needed to get done from a timber production side of it, but also from the habitat and the hunting and the strategy behind it, the hunt strategy behind it, the decisions we ended up making. Because, right, 150 acres type section of the farm, there's some swamp complex, there's a lot of 90 acres of 4-year-old, 3-year-old pine, came back very densely, a couple little SMZs, little hardwood drainages through this. And obviously, like you said, Jesse had put in a large destination food plot in this, but we needed some more definition and successional type cover. But also in the process of all that, that means sacrificing some of the pine. So, Penn, if you can just kind of walk through what that looked like again from the management decisions and then that timber market consideration as well, that might give good context to the story.
I first saw this property. One of the first things that I said was, "Hey, you could kill a lot of deer on this section right here." And the primary thought behind that was the amount of cover that exists there. And like you said, it was really dense stand. It had a lot of natural regeneration. And one thing that we did before you ever got there was we pre-commercially thinned that area, which essentially means we took out a lot of the inferior seedlings because they were very, very densely populated. And what that did is that gave even more cover, let more sunlight hit the forest floor, and open up the canopy for the leaf trees. When you showed up, that was something you were glad to see, and you tweaked it even further by obviously wanting to increase the open areas with fields and more bedding thickets, which for me as a forester, it's easy to be able to do that when the markets aren't looking great and the landowner's primary goal is wildlife management. And you gave some the areas you wanted us to mess with as far as creating old fields. Basically, we're killing more pine trees, and one of the methods we used in some areas was prescribed fire. And that's just an unbelievable tool if you know how to use it, and you use it with the correct conditions. And we opened up a lot of ground just with the prescribed fire, which is, inexpensive and easy, relatively speaking. And we, each step of the way, we've seen just more and more game come to that area.
Good, good. Where do you see timber market in 20 years with the pine side of things, Penn, and the mills and moving timber your area, let's say?
Man, if I knew what it was going to do in 20 years, I'd be a rich man. But this area is becoming more densely populated, which is increasing land values. Which, when that happens, what has happened here is mills have shut down, and they're moving, hopefully somewhere close enough where we can still access those markets, but. As of late, a lot of mills have shut down and no word of them opening back up. So markets are really depressed right now, and there's a lot of standing timber. So I don't know what that market's going to look like in 20 years. It doesn't look great right now.
I think it's going to be, well, I guess you have the urbanization side of things, that's definitely weighing into it. But also, Jesse, for people like yourself and a lot of people listening, the goals of land ownership is dramatically changing in the South as well. It's evolving into a lot of conservation and hunting focus, recreation focused, as opposed to 70s, 80s, 90s, when a lot of pine got planted. That was, hey, I want, the pine stands in this market, these trees that are grow, gonna harvest something, in 30 years, put the pay for my kids' college. It's not an income producing, or the goal may not be as much income producing off the timber. The reason why people are buying land. So I think that's going to shift into, scenario pretty hardly as well in the next five,
Absolutely.
10 years. That's dramatic the reason why people are owning land.
And also talking about pine and the market, as a landowner, you get a piece of property and it's I'm not buying it for the trees. I'm just buying it because you usually find large tract of land, most of them are as pine. And so then you try to go get, execute a plan that you gave us, and you're waiting on a logger to be able to get in there and be able to move the timber. And then most time it's the prices aren't good, but I didn't buy it for the initial, to sell trees or keep trees or develop. My goal is habitat. So to me,
Sure.
it's whatever you wanted to cut. I'm like, let's get rid of it. Problem is, we can't get rid of it. So now it's, I mean, I hate to even say this out loud and kind of give something away, but it's, I look for properties that have been clear cut. I'll be honest with you. If it's
Yeah.
got 2, 3 year old pines on it, man, I'm all over that. I want an opportunity because I know that I have cover for probably a good another 4 or 5 years,
Yep.
before the pines get too out of hand, too tall. And, but I'm able to manipulate it myself. And Penn can come in, he can help me. And we can pretty much, we got a clean slate in the sense, even though it has young pines on it.
Right. Yeah.
Which,
Between fire and drone spraying and everything, your options are almost endless as what you can make it. You don't have to wait on crews to necessarily harvest it and markets to be open to move that product.
and if it was pines beforehand and it was the final cut, like, it was the third thinning and they finally just clear cut it, what you find about year four, those stumps, they break up so nice. So it's like you're not dealing with having to take out stumps. You can run a big disc behind a dozer and it literally just splits them all in pieces. So, I mean, there's some benefits to that when it comes from a labor and developing it. And that's what this one section is. It was the youngest section I have with trees, young pines, and we were able to manipulate it very quickly and easily.
You know, a lot of you may not know, but Vortex is not just an optic company. They've got a full lineup of apparel. You may see us, Adam and I, Frank and Kyle, strutting our stuff in the Vortex wear at some of the videos. It's comfortable, it's built for the outdoorsmen, those who love to be in the field. They have anything from socks to shirts to hats to gloves. You name it, they've got it. They get you outfitted. Guys, go check out Vortex Apparel online at the Vortex website and use the code LEGACY20 at checkout to get 20% off of your Vortex wear gear. You won't be disappointed in the product itself. You look cool strutting your stuff out there. And you'll actually stay cool too. A lot of awesome stuff, guys. Go check it out.
So, I mean, we took out 6 acres. I think it was like 8 acres of young pines and put in old field, and this year we actually had a lot of Cerisa Lespediza come in. We didn't know it was there. I mean, the ground was pretty bare. I mean, we did a little thinning beforehand, but I mean, the Cerisa Lespediza came on strong and we ended up spot spraying the whole thing before it seeded out just so we could
Right.
get rid of it.
Yeah, and
So,
that's really the just off of the food plot complex itself, heading back towards this skinny pinch.
yeah.
So a big and the reason that it's there too, right, is this transitional cover between big destination and dense bedding cover. And so yeah, I really like the way it you know, let's say layout has come together. But that's the value of it being young pines, that it was kind of, hey, we better jump on this thing as soon as possible, because in the next few years it's going to get harder and harder to deal with these
Yep.
pines. We can mulch them, we can burn them, we can top kill, like we not top kill, excuse me, but just kill outright if we get a hot enough fire. But like, we better act now. And these growing seasons are, you know, particularly important to change and morph those dense pine stands into what you want them to be. So yeah, you guys jumped on that, and right, it's crazy, but guess where some of the first success came from off the farm? Is an area that got the most intensive management done on it. And thankfully, right, a lot of people are might think, you know, I'd be terrified to go in there and change too much, right? There's a target deer in there. He was there last year, but if I go and I do too much, man, I might bump him out. He might not use that anymore. Well, obviously, considering your
Oh,
success, that we're going to get into here in a second,
yeah.
he did not. He stayed there. He was there.
I mean, we did a lot of work in there. I mean, we got him on camera this summer in that destination food plot. We put a big water hole on the west side, and it's the section that we decide we end up planting alfalfa this year. We actually were able to get the soil amended correctly from soil, doing the soil tests and everything. So it was good to go. And I want to say I have it. I mean, it's July 7th. I usually put cameras out 4th of July weekend. It's just kind of like a tradition for me. That's when I start putting cameras out. And on the 7th, we saw him. He was in there, daylight, and you see the reflection in the water, and he's standing there, and you're like, I mean, he's in velvet, sm still small. And then we saw him again on the 20th. And then the photo that really got my attention was, August 16th. And August 16th, it was up close photo of him, and I was like, whoa, okay, that's a big jump from last year. And he's 4 and a half.
And you knew exactly who he was at that point,
Oh
too.
yeah, his right main beam had a real big curl on, when it came up, so it was almost like it was going straight up at the end, so you couldn't you just you couldn't mistake in who it was. And there's
Sure.
another 8-pointer in there too that he's a year behind him. He's 3 and a half this year, and he's going to be just as good, if not better. So,
Right.
that night I went out to the farm, and I was actually on the phone with Penn, and we're talking about, all right, we got to make a strategy so we can get ready for hunting season. He needs to be shot this year, because the way the neighbors, they hunt within, they like to hunt the, they're fence sitters, they're going to hunt. So we knew that deer traveled a little bit as things were still developing. So, I mean, we only been doing it for about a year and a half, developing that section. So we actually we were talking about it, and we said, okay, the skinny pinch is where he's going to die. And we remembered exactly what you told us in our Zoom call when we went over the plan. And I mean, and we figured that's where he was. So I went and put a camera over there, actually the trail that comes out of that 11 acre bedding area to this little skinny bottleneck. And 4 hours later, after putting that camera up, he's with four or five other bucks, bachelor group, and he's in the back, and you can see him, and we're like, this is it.
Nice.
He's gonna die here this year. And so immediately we turned our focus to develop that, and we were in there a lot. I mean, I think I'm trying to remember, Penn. I think it was I had mulched those pines in September of 24, and then Helene hit us. So that kind of delayed the development of that. And then this year, I think, Penn, you got in there June, and you had already disced it and planted it. I think we planted in soybeans. It was a mix of stuff. And then August, once we knew that, we knew we had to lime it. So I think we just went ahead and limed it, disced it again, turned everything under, and then we went ahead and broadcasted oats and clover, because it's supposed to be a clover patch. And then we got a little rain. We did it right before the rain hit, and then the rain stopped. And as you know, in August, we had all that rain. And then, I mean, we just got our first rain. I think it's like 8 or 9 weeks
Oh boy.
today or yesterday. So it's Penn actually was he, I can't show up to the farm one day, and I go, what are you doing? And he's filling up a 1,000 gallon water trailer. And I see the sprinkler in the back of his truck, one of those big irrigation sprinklers.
Yeah.
And he goes, don't ask. And he just, next thing you know, he ended up 5,000 gallons later, just putting enough water on this little half acre to get everything to germinate. And then it was enough to get a good response. And I think they hit it a couple more times. But end result was everything was put into this one spot for the success that
And
we were able to achieve.
yeah, that's what's I think so important about this the skinny pinch plot itself, because in size, how big is that thing? You guys remember off the top of your head?
It's just a little over, I think it's a half
Right at half.
acre.
Yeah, half acre or so.
Yeah.
But the most important thing for those listening is this: the location of this plot is adjacent to a bedding thicket, right? In what an area of, I guess I would term sacrifice pine, right? And we'll talk about that in a second. But this big drainage comes up and kind of wraps, it forces deer from the bedding thicket to wrap around, kind of horseshoe through that old field section that we mentioned earlier, Jesse, that deer transition through it to get out to that destination. So this is a situation where if it arises correctly, right, you can get in here in an evening and catch deer before they go to a destination, or the inverse of that is you get past them by them, avoiding that big destination food plot itself with terrain and thick cover and pines, and you can get in the backside of this skinny pinch plot and not disturb deer that are going to work in a morning situation out of the destination and back into bedding because it's so close and adjacent to bedding, but you're not bumping and alerting that bedding area itself. So I really find that most success can come from areas like this where it's you're killing deer in transition, but it tends to be not the end destination of a giant food plot or the end destination of bedding, but somewhere in the middle or closer towards bedding is probably going to have the highest frequency of daylight occurrences. And just the way this thing bottlenecks down, man, it transitions so nicely into that old field. Either cut across this little SMZ or wrap around it. But either way, it's a very secure, I would call it tons of comfort cover around there. But somewhere I could easily see from now and in the future, just the way it sets up, this being a killing spot for that target buck next year and years to come, that this keeps throwing off good deer on the farm.
Yeah, and in this same spot, there's a, you have you designed in a small little wildlife opening that's on that SMZ side, while we're hunting on the away from that, across from it. So it's, you got that wildlife opening, but kind of the way it went down the hill is where the fire break was, and our fear was those deer were going to just walk that fire break and never roll up and just go right around that drain. Well, we ended up blocking that off and taking the dozer, and actually you had us just kind of knock that hill down so the deer wouldn't just walk right up into that food plot, and they have to come through the wildlife opening and then right into that little clover plot. And
There was a big berm right there, and
there
basically just
was,
goes the berm, smooth it out, transition up to that wildlife
and then
open.
you have the road that's coming out of the bedding area, which was, short. It was the old logging road that went all the way back into the back to have a deck at one time. They would walk that road right into that food plot. And I mean, I hunted that spot for the, I mean, my first hunt this year was, it was a Saturday before I shot him, and that was the first sit. And I mean, I saw, six, eight deer that morning. Most of them were all bucks cruising, and they all came right in, went right around a drain and did their thing. I could see across into the old field, across SMZ, and the does would be out there. And, it's just, you can see it all play together, which led to another sit. And then, finally, being able to have the opportunity to, harvest this deer. So,
And you had texted me the day before you harvested him
oh,
because you had missed an opportunity. That's the
yes.
way it always works, man.
Oh,
Just
it was a killer because, I hunted that Saturday, and then I was like, all right, I'm gonna get in the stand on Tuesday morning. And it didn't work out because I had to help with I have four children, and even though I'm retired, I still, want to be involved and help out. And so my wife really needed me to do drop off. So I did drop off, so it kept me from being in the stand. And that afternoon I had a buddy who was coming who didn't have to work. He was gonna come hunt. And then of course Penn, he had slated to hunt that evening too. So as I was looking at trail cameras, I was working all day, and we were putting up some blinds and stuff that day in a couple other spots. And I looked at my trail cameras just a curiosity before I left the truck, and I'm like, you won't believe it, Penn. Look who daylighted this morning, and I missed it. And so of course, Penn's ragging me because I, missed that opportunity, but he felt bad for me too. So
Penn would never do that.
no,
Are you
never. And so I ended up hunting that evening. I actually had some does come in, and I actually had to text Penn. I'm like, I need you to come in and just kind of drive down the power line just to kind of bump them a little bit, just so they see headlights so I can get out. Because things are still developing. We have a, a blind that's tucked away, but still, I didn't want to take that chance when I know he's daylighting. I'd rather someone else come in and bump stuff than me getting out. I didn't want to risk it. And so then I told my wife, I was like, I sent photos to you. I'm like, look at this. And you asked me, like, where is this? And I was like, the Skinny Pinch. And you're like, yeah. Yep. And you're like, yep, that's where he's going to die. He's
Yep.
dying this year in that spot if you get him. So next morning, I get in a blind. I mean, I got in early. I think I was in before 6 o'clock. And as you know, and then he actually had another deer come in that we're trying to get rid of. He's an old buck going downhill. And he came in first, and then he went off. And then I was looking over into the old field, and this 8-pointer that I shot, he actually came right up that dozer trail through the old field. I mean, through the wildlife opening.
Yep.
And all I could see was his chin and his rack. And I'm like, is that the big eight? And I'm looking, and I'm like, wait, it is. And I was just like, it was at first, it was like, no way, it can't be him. And then he stepped out into the food plot, and I'm like, you need to shoot. Why are you just looking at him? You know, it's like, so I got situated,
You're
and
awestruck.
I was, truly was, because it's just, you know, it's all the hard work you put in everything, and it's now it's like, oh my goodness, it's gonna come true. You know what I
Right,
mean? And it's
right.
like, I just gotta get this finished. And I was able to make a, I mean, a great shot. I mean, it was only 60 yards. And you know, he took two jumps, went right back down that dozer trail, and then he went out of sight. And of course, you know what happens, everything goes to your mind. It's like, did I make a good shot? Did I rush it? Well, you know, and
Sure.
so Penn, we have this thing because he likes, you know, if I call him, he's be whispering. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm getting ready to shoot a big buck over in such and such, which is on my farms.
Well, which of course is on your place.
Yeah, he's
And
gonna, not.
it's always the area that is or has like the top up and comer too.
Oh,
Always.
yes. You know, and he's like, shh, I'm getting ready to pull a trigger. You know, he wants, you know, he's just trying to rub it in. He's hunting and I'm not, but he's not even hunting. And so end result was I call him or I texted him and say, I just shot the big eight. And then of course he's like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's 7:30. He doesn't believe me. And so I call him and I'm telling him, he's like, no, I don't believe you. So he's like, take a picture. So of course I have my hand holding the, you know, cartridge, you know, empty, you know, Spence cartridge, and shooting out, you know, taking a picture out of the blind, you know, into the food plot. And he's like, you gotta be kidding me. Did you really shoot him? And just from there, he's like, don't you go look for him. You gotta let me go with you. And so it just, this, to have that opportunity to, it just led to like an all day celebration. You know,
Right.
it's like in, you know, shooting the animal, but the reward of being able to have my friend and my wife, she even drove out. She did drop off that morning, and she drove all the way out there just so she can go recover the animal with us.
Nice, yeah.
And it was just a really great day. And then the celebration after that, and just, you know, Penn and I, we find ourselves calling each other going, I just can't believe it happened. Like it finally happened. You know,
Right.
and it's just a great feeling to see your handiwork come together, to be able to take a plan that you gave us, and to, like I said, I mean, I tell people I drank the Kool-Aid, I'm all in. You know, if you recommend it, and there's some things we've talked about. We're like, hey, what about this, or ideas? And you're like, you know what, I like that idea. And there's other times you're like, this is why, and then you explain it to us, and it makes sense.
Right.
So.
And that's what I love is about what we have working, let's say, together is I may not be there every day like Penn is, and he has a lot of local knowledge, obviously, with regard to how to get things done. This is going to work, this is not going to work, and ideas are absolutely, let's say, welcomed in the collective, like three heads that get to bounce ideas back and forth and kind of run with something, and create something that a lot of people have not seen before, have not experienced in the South, have not managed landscapes like this, this intensity and or this particular, layout and design of things. So it's a lot of fun when I get to obviously join you guys in the field different times of the year to plan and see what worked, what didn't work, the progress of it. But ultimately it's this kind of success that's like, yes, they got to experience the opportunity to be successful, yield some of the fruits, right, of that labor, and enjoy, right, the camaraderie that comes with hunting with friends and family on a family piece. So I love seeing and hearing y'all's success with this, because this is just one deer, and this is one of many to come. And again, I know how you guys attack things, and I know the progress of many of the other farms, and this is just a matter of time before whatever day it was last week, right, that you were able to be successful. Y'all are gonna get to do that again and again and again and again on many other great deer.
Yeah, and I think it's valuable to add too that kind of a long-term goal for Jesse and his family, and I'm in agreement, is we want to try and harvest 5.5 year old bucks or better. Obviously, this was a 4.5 year old deer, and a lot of that had to do with, let's see a little bit of fruits of our labor, even though that's kind of below what we want to do. It encouraged everybody. It was a victory, and sally forth and let's do it again, just like you're saying, Matt. We look forward to doing that with a 5.5 year old buck in South Carolina.
On repeat. And that's the other side of it. I kind of mentioned it earlier, is you guys often, in August, September timeframe, are sending photos back and forth, and we're talking age, we're talking, what do we think this one is? Do you have previous history here with this deer? It's really difficult to harvest 5.5 year old deer when there's very, very, very few of them on a landscape, due to hunting pressure, hunter densities, and regulations within the state itself. I'm not here to say, good, bad, or indifferent of what it is. It's just the product. The reality is there's not many 5.5 year old deer. Probably sub 1% of the total population is 5.5+. Again, a state like South Carolina, it's like that's very difficult to harvest those when there's so few of them, much less manage and grow them. But to have that as your goal, and be getting there and taking those strides that you guys are, it's extremely commendable.
And I think if it wasn't for the fact is we have, a neighbor on each side, and the amount of activity that increased within the week before, me shooting this deer, I knew where he was traveling because there is an oak flat on the neighbor's place that these deer are they're just pouring into. And I know the guy, he's hunting in there, and I would watch his truck pull up to the gate because right across from my farm entrance, and I could see him pull up into that, and I'm like, yep, I know that truck. And, and then on the other side, you have these two guys are hunting in a, kind of like a, I'm not going to say what it is, but it's a very wide open space with just some tripod stands. And I know that there's oaks on the boundary that they're hunting off of. And we knew that the neighbor had saw a really nice deer in a piece of property we owned next to them that were getting ready to put a little house on. And she's texting me, "Hey, you won't believe the deer I just saw walking the dog." You're like, "Oh man, he is going over there after all." And you're like, "Whew." So it's like I had to make a decision, and I think if the habitat was had made it a little bit further and we were in like year five, I might have a little more faith that, hey, I could probably roll the dice and give them that opportunity. But as we know, I mean, when they got a feeder slinging corn everywhere, right on the boundary, it's most likely they're gonna chase that doe when the time comes in for the rut. So.
And I think that's it's a great point that, you have to make the right decision, based on your knowledge of a deer, right? On his the history of the deer, the close proximity, that hunting pressure. There might be other places on this exact same particular farm that you're like, you know what, dude, I think he's safe. I know what he did last year. He didn't range that much, and he's more center. He's, getting the pass. He's getting that extra year, because I feel comfortable with that. I do the exact same thing up here, whether it's farm, whether it's neighborhood related, or just deer history related. Make that decision of, yep, my chances are just slim on a payoff next year, because I doubt he makes it one more year here based on what he's done and based on pressure on that side of the farm or the surrounding area or whatever the case may be. No, it's illegal based on neighbors with bait, like in Missouri. So, yeah, just compounding factors, but you make those decisions and enjoy the fruits like that. That's what's so much fun about this process is you're managing the land, you're improving it for particular game species, and then you get to literally harvest that, consume it, eat it. It's just the entire process is just a really awesome thing to get to grow and procure and be in God's creation all the time doing it. I mean, we're very, very fortunate that like the three of us get to spend as much time outside working and manipulating and seeing the complexities of God's design in
That's
creation.
right.
That's so much fun.
Oh yeah. And for me, being retired, it's like I work more now than I ever did before. It's like physical, just it's but I enjoy it. I do it. I work for myself. It's great. I've just been a dream of mine, and the Lord allowed that to come true. And so I thank him every day, and he surround me with good godly people to help support me, and I can't thank him enough. So it's all his doing. It's definitely not me. It's like my I thank my parents for believing in it, because my dad, he's a big hunter, and he has the desire, and he wants to shoot big deer too in South Carolina, as big as we can get in South Carolina, 5.5 or older. And it's just awesome to be out there and do it. I get just as much joy just watching deer and doing the work, knowing what I'm doing. It's just in that same area. I remember the first time we bought that, I heard one or two quail. Now there's quail all in that block. And then now they've crossed the street into the portion that's almost, 300 acres, and we're building our house over there. And I have quail all around behind my house where we're building. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's what's so good to be able to sit back and see, like, man, I'm not necessarily the reason, but I might be a catalyst, or I might be to some degree influential in the improvement of wildlife and the improvement of a landscape, and that's a cool thing to partake in itself. So, guys, before we wrap up, is there any other aspects of, let's say, the story for this beautiful South Carolina eight pointer that you guys want to share that you think would be helpful, or maybe a piece of encouragement for those listening who are in the South dealing with pines or dealing with a tough neighborhood? Anything else that you guys like, man, this was a big takeaway for me from this story. Some of the things that I learned, in particular, I'll let both you guys share.
Well, for me, I would say not being scared of young pines. Tracts of land that you can actually, prices here in the upstate have gone through the roof just in the last, I mean, just a couple of years, really gotten out of hand. But even before that, it was increasing. Those 6 years before, we bought our properties. And I say the short, buying stuff that's planted young pines, just having the opportunity to manipulate them yourself without having to depend upon someone else. I mean, more likely the mills and loggers to help you execute a plan. And that would be my biggest thing, just take away. And the fact is, like in these bedding cuts, I mean, this 5 acre one that's between the destination and the old field, and then we got the 11 acre one that's on the other side of the SMZ where Skinny Pinch is. I mean, being able to manipulate those with fire, and then to be able to go in with the skid steer with a brush cutter with mulching teeth on the bottom and literally just take out whatever I wanted to, kind of put trails, open areas, go around the hardwood stuff, so it gives me something to hinge in the future, planting acorns, spreading acorns, trying to get some hardwood stuff to grow in there. I mean, just being able to manipulate short pines are so much easier. So that's my takeaway.
I love it. Pin.
Ooh, man, my takeaway is probably more of a personal thing. We have a family farm as well, and we've always wanted to shoot 5.5-year-old deer. And for I'm gonna say we've been managing for 10 years, and we didn't shoot a buck for 5 or 6 years, because we had this goal in mind. And as of lately, we've reduced that to 4.5 years old, and it's brought a lot of joy back into hunting for us because we're shooting bucks. And I think that needs to be a priority wherever you hunt, is to continue to enjoy it. You can work yourself to the bone trying to get this goal, but at the end of the day, it's about making memories and enjoying the land.
That's definitely true, and I think very that's just wisdom, and sound piece of advice. I think every goal and age class desired is respective to a general area in a neighborhood, or you just have to be willing to sacrifice potentially a lot of years and time in not harvesting. And for some, that's great, and to others, it may not be, and some others, it just may not be realistic at all. But just making sure that you're enjoying a sport that has so much that it can give to you, I think is huge. And oftentimes, I think we let that get in the way of just having fun and enjoying the hunt and the harvest itself. So now that's a great point, Penn, and I'm glad you brought that up. Sure. Well, guys, I appreciate you jumping on and sharing the story with everyone. There's going to be a lot more to come, I feel like, from the two of you guys here in the future. Like I said, I know the intensity, and I know the hard work that you guys are doing here, and how you guys are reshaping, rethinking. And in some ways, I'm going to say boldly, I think in time, potentially redefining what trrophy properties and trophy hunting can look like in South Carolina. So that's a big statement, but I think that's the direction, that's the mindset that you guys are taking into it. And I know what has come of right the work so far, and to be a part of it is a joy and an honor for me, and I certainly am grateful for it. And already got some time scheduled out for 2026 to be back, and I'm excited. But potentially there's another good harvest story to come before then, so I don't want to get my cart before the horse. But hopefully, Penn, you're up next.
Yeah, we'll see about
that.
Oh man.
No, well, we
Guys,
appreciate it, Matt.
yep,
Yeah, we enjoyed it,
absolutely.
brother. Look forward to seeing you.
Yes, sir. You guys take care.
All right, thank you.